to just finish off the points about stock of priorities. So just first also to make two observations from this past Shabbos, observations that didn't necessarily fit into our somewhat tight parsha schedule on Thursday. So one is that we talk about tzedakah. So we assume that the obligation of tzedakah is applicable to everyone, even if you're not in a position to give a lot of money, even if you're not in a position to give meiser, which we haven't really talked about really as a concept, but that there is some minimal obligation of tzedakah on everybody, even an ani. And it's an interesting question, just how much is that obligation, or really what that obligation is supposed to maintain. If we say that an ani who is himself taking tzedakah is also obligated to give tzedakah, so are we saying that that means we should give tzedakah to the ani so that he can give it to someone else? Which poses the question, what exactly are we accomplishing? And as we sometimes say, what do we need the middleman for? Let's just give the tzedakah straight without going through this process. Or, as some understand, does it mean that the ani has to take from whatever he has, as little as it is, and live even more tightly a little bit, give a little bit to tzedakah, not so much it's going to really make him starve, but the little amount he has should take a little bit of that and be able to participate in the mitzvah of tzedakah. So it's interesting, those two tzedim probably connect to the question of what exactly are we trying to accomplish with tzedakah. But if we say that we're trying to accomplish the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, we want the world to be taken care of through tzedakah, so then it really doesn't seem to make sense to give tzedakah to the ani so that he can give to someone else. It would seem to be that that's not the most efficient use of tzedakah. If we're focused, however, on Valakta V'Drafa, so then perhaps that does make sense, because everyone should be involved in acting generously. One should not be exempt from generosity just because one is himself taking tzedakah. So if this is a nida that we're trying to create, so then it makes sense that even if it's a little bit of a roundabout way, it's not adding to the tzedakah pool at all, it still probably is worthwhile. The other way, if to say that the ani has to squeeze himself and be able to give without taking extra from others, so that doesn't strain the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha angle as much. You know, one could question, is it really adding to the overall pool of stock? Yes, on a minimal level it is. So maybe if you say that we're really focused on making more of a difference, then maybe it's a little bit more understandable that we should assume that it should come from what the ani is already getting, and we're not telling him to take any more. But what's interesting is, this past week we read Parsha Shkolim. So Parsha Shkolim, so the Torah says explicitly that Ha'ashir lo yarbeh, v'hadal lo yamit, that one is not allowed to deviate from the exact amount of the half shekel, whether you're rich and you want to give more, or you're less wealthy and you want to give less. So in that context, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos does write explicitly that the ani has to give a chatzi shekel, and if he's not able to, so we give to him in order to be able to give it. Now, it's not exactly comparable to general tzedakah, but it's just interesting that there we do find meferish that the ani is expected to participate in an equal sense, even if that means that we're going to have to give him more so that he can perform this act of matzah shekel. It's just an interesting marmakum. Again, there are differences between the general mitzvah of shkolim and tzedakah l'aniyim. It's an interesting idea to keep in mind. Also, interesting marmakum, just for anybody who has time to do some extra reading. So, in terms of this past week's parsha, so there is a beautiful sefer called Ohel Yaakov by Yaakov Farbstein. He's the author of many beautiful svarim, and recently he's come out with a number of svarim on Chumash, halachic essays in the parsha, really. So, in Mishpatim, you have so many different things you can talk about in the parsha's Mishpatim. Happens to be that he talks about a topic very close to what we've been discussing, and it's based around the pasuk in Kesef Talbet Ami, the obligation in this past week's parsha of lending money, which, as we've been discussing, is a little bit different than what we've been talking about in our sugya. Our sugya is about kind of fake loans, pretending you're lending money when you're really giving it straight out, but our parsha focuses on the obligation to lend, as a genuine lend, but to help out people who are potentially suffering financially. And so his focus within that is particularly relevant to our Sunday series here. It's entitled, Siman Yud Aleph, if anybody wants to take a look, I have a copy here, entitled Mibsarcha Al Tesawim. And basically, the essay is about the kedimus that we have in Staka, so the priorities that are given to relatives. So what exactly is the driver of that priority? Is that the halacha in Staka, that we have priorities within Staka, and this comes first because it is the most intense fulfillment of the mitzvah of Staka? Or is it from the separate idea of Mibsarcha Al Tesawim, which is very much in sync with what we've been discussing, that when we prioritize Staka, so we could have one of two reasons to do that. It could be that the concept of Dei Machzoro, that's been our focus, is felt most intensely and urgently to a certain recipient, and therefore that should come first. So basically the key of mitzvah of Staka is most powerfully here. Or is it that there are other mitzvot that are being accomplished at the same time, and therefore that's a reason to bump something up to the top of the list? So he discusses essentially those two tzaddim in this essay. So it's an interesting essay. It's various makoros to establish the existence of these two streams within Staka, and the fact that it's derived on one level from this past week's parsha, because the idea of ani ya'ircha kodmim, and anybody kodem, so Chazal darshan that in two places. They darshan that on the pasuk in the A that we've been focusing on, Kiyadukha Evyon, etc., etc. But they also darshan it in this past week's parsha that in terms of the mitzvah of halva, who do you prioritize, who you're going to lend money to? So the Gemara Maseches Bav Metzia that darshans it out from this past week's parsha, so he develops this whole concept of the two sources. So again, if you have extra time, it's a long essay, but if you have extra time and you want to see a little bit more beyond about these two strains within the priorities of Staka, is a nice marmalcom to take a look at. Okay, so what we've been up to in our discussion really is talking about priorities within causes now. So we talked for a long time really about priorities within people, which people do we give first. So now just to say a little bit about priorities of causes. So among them, one of them we spoke about the length on our daf, and that is Hachnas Eskala and marrying off Yosomos, so we won't spend much time on that. The other big priority is one that comes out of the second part of the Book of Basra, and that is the obligation of Talmud Torah. So we mentioned that Book of Basra, the first part of Daf Ches, is one of the major sources for topics of Staka alongside our daf. So the first parakah of Basra has a lot as well. But in the second parakah of Basra, so there is a discussion there about the Takanas Yeshua ben Gamla, that he made an institution that every city should have a Talmud Torah, that every city should have yeshiva for children to learn. Until then, it's been considered the responsibility of the father. The father had to teach his son how to learn. And the concern was, so what happens if you have children who don't have fathers, or you have children whose fathers aren't able to facilitate this? So there should be communal institutions that address this concern. So that was the whole institution, and that's also one of the major priorities that we have when we focus on Staka, which is not really necessarily Midin Staka. It's not necessarily something that is in the category of Aniyim. Is that if you have a certain responsibility as far as living in a city, so this is a part of it, and that ranks very high as one of the basic mandates that a citizen has. So that's also very high in our Staka, on our Staka priorities. So Chafetz Chaim writes that the limitation, which is going to come out of our Gemara, we'll talk about that also, of not spending more than a fifth of your money on Staka, says that doesn't apply to Achzakas Talmud Torah. If you want to be involved in learning in terms of support beyond your one-fifth, that's legitimate. And that's a whole discussion how exactly it's factored this in. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he notes that you could have two different goals in terms of supporting Talmud Torah. So we have what's known as Tashbar, Tinoka Shel Beis Rabban, that you have to supply the learning for the students, for the children. And then you also have adult men who are learning, who are training to serve the community as the rabbanim, as the poskim, as the machanchim. So we need to make sure that we have those, so we have to support that as well. So he has a discussion there about what takes priority between those two causes. And he assumes that if the adults are able to live, if they're able to support themselves in a basic sense, so then the priority is really on the children's education. We also find that the Shulchan Aruch has a line that supporting the shul is a big priority. Mitzvah Space Akness is a big priority. Some of the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, they ask that it doesn't really sound like that from Tosfos, the Tosfos from Bava Basra, I don't know if I'm on the Homosana, that I will give it to you as well, that seems to say the opposite. So Rav Osman has a tshuva about what exactly we mean by prioritizing the Beis HaKnesses, and it kind of highlights the fact that really all of these causes, there is a lot of subjectivity. And when we talk about one cause before the other, so we really have to know exactly what we mean. So we mean that these things are important. So a Beis HaKnesses is important because you need a place to daven, and because it's not only something that makes davening possible, but it's something that makes davening idealized, and that makes learning idealized, and that accomplishes a lot of other things. So it is understandable why there's a priority to have a Beis HaKnesses. We have to figure out exactly what that means. Does that mean the Beis HaKnesses should have beautiful artwork on the wall? Does that mean you should have a lot of shuls? So, you know, what exactly that means as far as how it's prioritized is not a simple question. Rav Osman has a couple of truths about this, and it highlights the fact that when we talk about these priorities, they're never really absolute, and they're always subject to degree. So, for example, you also find such a discussion when it comes to chasadim. So this discussion, the Rambam says that Nichum Avelim, for example, comes before Bikur Cholim. That Nichum Aveilim, the Rambam writes, is a chesed l'chaim v'la mesim, because you are taking care of the Aveilim and you're also showing honor to the mesim themselves. The Rambam understands it's a double chesed, so therefore it takes priority over a Bikur Cholim. So some of the commentaries on the Rabbis and others ask that, what do you mean? But Bikur Cholim could be Pikuach Nefesh. Right? That it could be that if you're going to visit the person, you'll be able to provide such benefit that you're going to save their lives. How could you say that Nichum Aveilim is going to come first? So it's a whole discussion what exactly it means, and there are different interpretations. But the one idea that comes out in later Sfarim is that these ideas are very abstract, because we can say that, you know, in some type of conceptual level, so Nichum Aveilim is a greater priority or has greater accomplishments associated with it than Bikur Cholim. But if we were to assess that it's really Bikur Cholim on the level of Pikuach Nefesh, more urgent, so then that would come first. So the truth is, any specific act of chesed, just like really any specific act of tzedaka, is going to have different elements. It's going to drive its urgency. And as we've seen so far, there are different reasons why you would prioritize something. Sometimes it's because of urgency, sometimes it's because you'll have greater impact, sometimes it's because you have a greater connection to it, and sometimes it's because you're accomplishing other mitzvahs at the same time. These are all legitimate factors, and they're all going to play a role, and they're not going to be weighted up equally. Everything's going to have a different degree of scoring on this chart. So lamaisa is always going to be a lot of discretion, and therefore that's a legitimate discretion as long as we're familiar with these principles and aware that they exist. And that discretion is also, I think, and they say so, I think it's a part of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan. The fact that these things are not so objective has a great ma'ala for two reasons, two components to take the same reason, that we have lots of stuck in needs in the world, lots of good causes that have to be supported. So one of the reasons that is a shot that that's going to happen, that the various causes will be attended to, is the fact that the list of priorities is not the same for any two people. And part of the reason is because of objective factors. So one person is related to individuals and the other person is related to different individuals. And the other is because of the subjectivity and decision, that even if two people have the exact same connections, but there are all kinds of subjective assessments, and that's good. It means that hopefully all the causes have a better chance of being taken care of, because this list is not a list that we could just enter into a computer and have it spit out some exact directions, and I think that's probably Littlewell. So all of these are important principles to come in mind, keep in mind, and in some cases they address the dinim and the nosin, as they say, the aspects of halacha b'dracha, that we're trying to fulfill our own personal mitzvah of tzedakah in a way that maximizes our own spiritual accomplishment. And maybe have Tzoreach HaKamocha component that we look to help the most people to accomplish the most. There are priorities from both directions, and we try to keep them in balance, and hopefully a careful and honest effort to do so will result in the greatest possible kiyum of both. You have a question?
How is Bikurchom to accomplish?
Because sometimes, question, Bikurchom is a longer discussion, which I'm happy to talk about, because it's a great topic, but it's a little bit off topic, but just to say a word or two about it. So, Bikur Cholim, the understanding could be that there's a couple different ways in which it's Pikuach Nefesh. You know, that if you say, like the Ramban and the later sources, build up the Ramban and the Sefer Torah Adam has a number of different accomplishments and goals that you look for in Bikur Cholim. And one of them is that you should daven on behalf of the Cholim, that he puts a tremendous emphasis on. So it could be that if somebody is at the stage where this one more tefillah is going to make a difference, and that's pikuach nefesh. But you also find in a more direct sense that, or in a more olam hazeh kind of sense, that the person sometimes gets such a chizuk from being visited that that's going to make a difference, and that shows up in all kinds of different levels. The Gemara says in the Sefer Nedarim that somebody who visits a chole is going to take away a part of their sickness. So the Mefarshim talk about what that means. Sorry, 60th, right? So what exactly that means. Also, the Gemara has this concept which makes it sound even more mystical. The Gemara says that it means Ben Gilo, that somebody who, some of the Rishonim say that means he shares the same mazel, he shares the same sign, the same birthday, the same sign. So if you understand it like that, it sounds like a very mystical idea, but that you are taking away and mitigating the choli to some degree by visiting them. It happens to be a number of the Rishonim, the Meiri, and others understand it a little bit more olam hazeh kind of way. And they say that Ben Gilo is not about mazel. Ben Gilo is about somebody who's of a similar social grouping, a similar age group, a similar temperament. In other words, it's somebody who is going to have an emotional effect on the choli, is going to feel supported to be in the presence of this person, and therefore he's going to feel like he has a lift. So that idea is another way in which you find that you're going to have maybe a life-saving effect. If enough people are able to do this, so potentially you could have a life-saving effect on the person, and therefore one could imagine a way in which Bikur Cholim could be Pikuach Nefesh. But that's exactly the point, that one could imagine, but not necessarily. So that's what some of these later Sfarim are saying, that the Yesh V'Yesh, that there's Bikur Cholim that is not really either so urgent or going to make such a difference, and there's Bikur Cholim that maybe will make more of a difference. So if one could assess that that's what we're talking about, so then that's going to be more important than Nicham Aveilim. While in the abstract, you could say that the Nicham Aveilim is going to have a certain weight and accomplishment that's greater than Bikur Cholim. Again, it illustrates that there's different ways in which we talk about these ideas of Kedimus, that sometimes we mean them in a conceptual sense, sometimes we mean them in a real-world sense. In the real-world sense, it's harder to be so abstract about it, which, as we also discussed last week in terms of the sphere between Harius and Ksubis, that maybe that's why you find more of an emphasis on Ksubis than Harius, that maybe the Harius factors are more abstract and conceptual, and they're important to convey because they have their own inherent meaning. But as far as what we do practically, it's going to be closer to what's described in Ksubis. Question? Okay, so this is also, just to mention one more point about the Tzedakah priorities, the Gemara Masechta is Gittin. I don't remember if they put this in the original Gemara Pummels, but we'll have to add it afterwards. The Gemara in Masechta's Gittin also does emphasize that the Chi of Tzedakah is not just the Jews, it's the whole world. The Gemara says that Mefarnesin Aniye Akav Im Aniye Eretz Yisrael, that we have an obligation to support the Aniyim of the world. And the Gemara has this language which says, Im Aniye Yisrael, which some of the Rishonim, Machlokas, Rashi, and the Ran, some of the Rishonim mean that it's only while you're taking care of the Bnei Yisrael, you should also take care of your Musalim at the same time. But the Shach Paskins like the Ran, that's not what we mean. We mean in general, even without the Aniye Yisrael, there is a mitzvah to take care of the Aniyim of the whole world. That's also part of the responsibility. So presumably that's also something that has to be fleshed out. So again, when we say that the stock of priorities are not absolute in the sense that you're not expected to give 100% of your stock to the first item and the first recipient, and then only if there's something left to go to the next one. So we assume instead that you give the majority of stock to number one on the list, and the majority of what's left to number two, and the majority of what's left to number three, et cetera, et cetera. So that one should factor in all of the various causes, all of the various ways in which it's connected to various nishrafim, and try to accomplish a staka in the most complete sense. Okay, so I think that's what we'll say for now in terms of priorities. So maybe we'll get started on the Purim topics now, and we'll get a few minutes in, and we'll continue it over the next 2 weeks. So did anyone start the Maamar Kamos this morning at all, the Purim Maamar Kamos? Okay, so the two mitzvahs that we want to focus on that are the most directly relevant to what we're talking about otherwise are the mitzvah of Shalach Manos and the mitzvah of Matanos Levyonim, which together comprise half of the mitzvah super. There are four mitzvah super. The mitzvah super, for the most part, are considered by Poskim to be mitzvah saseh midivrei Kabbalah. Now what that means is that one might say, okay, the mitzvah super are clearly not min haTorah, and the whole event of Purim took place long after the Torah was written, so therefore they can't be mitzvos min haTorah, they're all midrabanan. So on some level that's true, but practically speaking there's another level in between, that the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yuches talks about what's known as Divrei Kabbalah. Divrei Kabbalah has nothing to do with mysticism, but rather the reference to that which is received through the tradition and is understood to be a reference to scripture. That if something comes through Nach, through the Divrei Kabbalah, so then it's not a Din Min HaTorah, it's not the Chumash itself, but it's not Stamad Rabbanan, even though it was made by men, even though really it is Rabbanan, but it is endorsed and validated by the scripture, so that gives it a different status. So the Gemara there in Rosh Hashanah has a statement in a very specific context, and really a very narrow context. But the Gemara there says that Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah Dan. Divrei Kabbalah are equated, at least for some purposes, to Divrei Torah. So one could assume the Gemara is just talking about the very narrow context where it's applicable, but there were many who thought that it means that for all intents and purposes, we treat Divrei Kabbalah like Divrei Torah. The most prominent to express this was really, it's already in the Achronim, is the Shagas Aryeh. Shagas Aryeh in the Sefer Turei Eben, in the Maseches Megillah, the Peyim Beis. So the Turei Eben expresses this idea that Divrei Kabbalah to Divrei Torah Dami means, for all intents and purposes, that we treat Divrei Kabbalah Sveika L'chumra as if it is a Din Min HaTorah. Now, there are indications from the Rishonim that they didn't agree with that. There's indications from the Ramban, from the Rambam, from the Raivit. You could bring a number of Rayas from Rishonim that they did not work off this premise. But the Torah Eben was very influential, and many of the later sources do kind of take this as given that we go L'chumra when it comes to Divrei Kabbalah, and if not to equate it fully to a Din Min HaTorah, but at least to see it as more than a Derabbanan. So if we have to decide between a clash between a Derabbanan and a mitzvah of the Divrei Kabbalah, that the Divrei Kabbalah mitzvah has a higher status, if not fully equal to a Din Min HaTorah. So the mitzvahs of Purim, the four mitzvahs that we have in Purim, are understood therefore to be Divrei Kabbalah, because they are all conveyed to us through the pasuk in Megillas Esther. And these four mitzvahs, therefore, have this weight to them, that being the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, probably only Kriyas HaMegillah during the daytime, that's a discussion we'll see if we have time to talk about, Kriyas HaMegillah and the Suda, and the obligations of Shalach Manos and Matanos Levyonim. Those last two obligations, see, you notice we did not list getting drunk, so Chai Vinishul Basume, to the extent that it exists, is a prat in Suda, We'll see if we have time to discuss that. That's a highly controversial and tricky topic. But certainly we'll see that it's not a separate mitzvah. That whatever extent exists, part of the Suda. And even that, there's a lot to talk about, but that's not a topic right now. But clearly from the Tzedakah Chesed focus, so we find that that takes a huge chunk of Purim. That's a huge chunk of attention on Purim. So the question is, how does Shalach Manas fit into this? How does Shalach Manas characterize itself? Matanos Levionim certainly seems to be a straight-out Tzedakah-oriented mitzvah. Is that true also about Shalach Manas? And in order to make it more Ksubis focused and more what we're involved in focused, so let's start off the question like this. So is it shayach to have a concept of kfiya by Shalach Manas? We know that kfiya is theoretically possible to have Bezdin get involved and compel a donation to tzedakah. So is that true also by Shalach Manas? So to discuss that question, so we have a very rigid mini Klal Yisrael. For the past 200 years, there's been a very strong minhag that all shailos of Shalach Manas have to be discussed through a certain specific chakira, and that if you fail to do this, you're violating a very carefully trod-out path in the Svarim. The Svarim has all followed a path that was really set down by the Chasam Sofer 200 years ago, and this has become the template for pretty much every discussion that one is going to have about Shalach Manas, so therefore we are bound by Minhag Klal Yisrael to assume that any shaila that comes up can be addressed through this chakira, so the shaila of kfiya by Shalach Manas is not going to be any different. So whether we get up to that today or next week, that's the question, but let's first discuss what that chakira is. So the story really got started, if you saw the Mahamakomos this morning, so you saw the Ramah, right? The Ramah is a controversial statement that the old Anose Kalim accepted. Now, what does Anose, what does the Ramah suggest as a Chiddush LaHalacha? Can you see it?
You don't accept it, you don't accept it.
Right, that theoretically, if one refuses to accept Shalach Manas, let's assume in this case, for the purposes of focus, that we're not saying that the recipient threw it in your face, that the recipient decided that he doesn't need it, that he's very happy to have the offer. But it's okay, you can live without it. So the Ramah says that the giver is in fulfillment of Shalach Manas. So if I call up Morty per morning, and I say, listen, I want to come bring you over Shalach Manas, and Morty says, oh, thank you so much, it's such a wonderful thought, I appreciate it so much. Happens to be, I'm so filled with Shalach Manas that I can't even open my door, I have just so many gifts here, so it's really not necessary. So then, I'm Yotze, that's it. I don't have to go around the room. I'm the first person I called. Luckily, I'm off the hook. So I don't have to go and find somebody else who's willing to take it. So this was controversial. There were those, the Prichadish and others, who asked on this. And they say that that's not what my Megillah Esther says, right? My Megillah Esther says that Mishloach Manos Ishtoriyeh. It doesn't say offering Manos Ishtoriyeh. So, where do you see the idea that if one offers Shalach Manas and doesn't actually give it to anyone, that that's a fulfillment of the mitzvah? There's discussion about this in the Karban Nisanel and the Rush and others. Morty?
Isn't Shalach Manas
means
sending? Meaning
one
sending
one would think, right, that's the point.
No, sending without meaning of being received.
Well, maybe, but let's say I don't even send it, right? Let's say I offer it to you. And you
isn't that sending?
Not necessarily, if I haven't actually done anything. But presumably, it would mean also, even if, let's say, I did send it and you choose not to receive it, it's an interesting deal to say that it's only the sending without the receiving, but maybe. You know, most assume that it's not so obvious it should mean that, or many assume that. There's a discussion with saying in the Karban Nisanel that, you know, sometimes we have a concept, let's say we have there's a concept called mechila, comes up in the first paragraph in Hegel, is a little bit of a preview for next year, that the halacha recognized, not talking about mechila for averus and mechavera, but the monetary mechila. So let's say if I owe Aryeh money, and then Aryeh says that it's okay, I don't need it, so then I am halachically in fulfillment of paying off my chov, right? If he's mocho, so then I don't have to pay anymore, I no longer have a chov to him. So that could mean, as some understand, that it could mean that the halacha views it as if he received it. That his decision that he doesn't want it, he doesn't need it, it's ki'ilu, I paid it. So, fine, that's enough. So if that's the mechanism that's required here, that it's all about making the recipient happy, and the recipient has control to say, listen, it's as if I received it, so fine, but we don't really know that that's true. We don't really know that that's what the mitzvah requires of us. So how do we know that the Ramah's psak is indeed correct? So this was a big controversy that went on for a few hundred years until it reached the desk of the Chasam Sofer. And the Chasam Sofer, his Chubas, and Arachayim, and Simon, and Kutzad, above, the Chasam Sofer takes up this question. It says, is the Ramah's psak correct? Is it really true that if you offer Shalach Manas to somebody and they say they don't need it, that that's going to be enough? So it says the Chasam Sofer, says, I think you have to figure out, the longest, it says, what exactly is the Gedr HaMitzvah of Shalach Manas? What's the reason that you have such an institution? So he did a little research, and he dug up in the earlier Svarim, it says there are essentially two reasons that he sees for the mitzvah of Shalach Manas. And we'll have to figure out what the reason is in order to know how to apply the halacha and to know whether the Ramah's psak is correct. So one reason he found was the Trumas Hadashin. And if the Trumas Hadashin understands that it's to help with a mitzvah of Purim, that's one of the other mitzvahs, and that is the mitzvah of Suda, that we know that there is the obligation to have a Suda on Purim, and not everyone is in a position necessarily to have a significant Suda. So if we create an institution where everybody's obligated to send gifts of food to each other, so then that will increase the ability of people in general to make a Purim Suda. So if that's the case, so and this is an important then concept to keep in mind, that essentially what he's saying is that Shalach Manos is really a very close partner of Matanos Levion. That it's really another stucker track that we have on Purim. And it's a different type of stucker that Matanos Levionim are cash gifts given to pure Levionim, so really poor people. While Shalach Manos is gifts of food that is a little bit more of a subtle type of gift, and this will come up as we see, that it's not meant to be as explicit assistance as Matanos Levionim is, but it's also really there in order to make sure that people who maybe aren't necessarily Levionim in the same sense, but are able to have a Purim Suda in a respectable fashion. So that's a very important characterization, and we'll see how that makes a difference. While there was another view that he found as well, and that was the view of the Manos HaLevi. So the Manos HaLevi is written by Shlomo Alkebetz. And this one line from the Manos HaLevi is the second most famous line he ever wrote, or second most famous thing he ever wrote. It's a far second. But what's the first? L'chadodi, right. So the author of L'chadodi, which is definitely more well-known than this, but then far second in the list, is this one line, the Manos HaLevi. The Manos HaLevi was his commentary, definitely easily available on HebrewBooks.org and many other places nowadays. So the Manos HaLevi was the commentary that Shlomo Alkebetz wrote on Megillas Esther. So if you look up in his commentary, you look on the pasuk of Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu, so says the Manos HaLevi, why do you have such an obligation? Because we are trying to fix what Haman said about us. Right? Haman said to Achashverosh that we should kill the Jews, Yesh Noamecha, because before there is this one nation of the Jewish people who is scattered and dispersed, and we should kill them. So we want to counteract that. We want to undo what Haman said about us, so we want to create Achdus. We want to show that we are not scattered and dispersed. So how do you create such a sense of cohesion? So we know that the fastest route to a man's heart is through his stomach. So if we send gifts of food, so then people will love each other, and that will create one entity, the opposite of what Haman said about us. So it says the Chasam Sofer, here we have it, that there are two reasons for Shalach Manos. One is essentially the gathered staka, that it's there to help people who don't have enough food to eat, while the other is to create Ahava V'Achva V'Shalom V'Reis, is to create bonds of friendship. Now, the next step is a little bit more subjective, but it's been widely accepted, that the Chasam Sofer writes, now let's consider within those two possibilities, so what's the halacha in the Rambam's case? That what if you want to offer somebody Shalach Manos, and they say it's okay, it's the thought that counts. Would we be okay with that? Would we say, okay, you're off the hook? So he assumes that that's only true according to the Manos Halevi. Because if the point is that we're trying to make friends, so then yes, you can make friends with such a gesture, even if you don't actually give it, but the individual knows that you're trying to reach out to them, so then that's going to accomplish something. Again, like we said before, we'll assume that he didn't throw it back in your face, but let's assume that it was a friendly refusal, that he said, thanks so much, but I don't need it, and I appreciate the thought. So maybe, according to the Manos Halevi, yes, it's the thought that counts. However, if you want to say, like the Trumas HaDeshem, that it's about helping people out with the Suda, so then he assumes that it wouldn't make sense that we should allow for Mechila. Because if the whole point is that Mechila is possible, if the whole point is that we're going to try to help people in need, so as we know from our Sugi and Suvas, that people in need are not always going to want to acknowledge their need, and not always going to want to accept staka. So if we give an escape route, if we say that it's possible to not take it, so then the people who need it, who are presumably kind of the middle class relatively, they're not the absolute Yonim who are already taking staka. The whole point of this institution is to create another tier of staka, which is not addressed to the Yonim in the same way. So this is a population that likely is not going to want to accept charity in the same sense. So if we say, well, the needy will take it, and the not needy will not take it, so then presumably we're going to undermine the whole plan, and then everyone's going to feel a pressure to not take it, and it's not going to accomplish what it's meant to accomplish. Also, you have the problem that people could get themselves off the hook, right? That if they know that certain people are going to refuse it, so they could just call up their rich friends and say, hi, I got Shalach Manos for you. Do you want it? The friend will say no, and then that'll be it. It's not going to actually involve any distribution of food. So if we're really trying to help out the needy, so then it makes sense that we should not allow mechila. That's going to undermine the whole system. So it says the Chasam Sofer, is the Ramah correct? He says he thinks it depends on this issue. That if you say that it's there as a staka kind of institution, there's no mechila. But if it's there to make friends, so then maybe mechila could work. It is indeed the thought that counts. So it is pretty amazing. If you want to test out the theory, maybe somebody should get a PhD counting up all the sources. But if you read just about any discussion of Shalach Manos in the past 200 years, see how many you find that don't make reference to this machlokas as a part of the Shiloh. That this Chasam Sofer was enormously influential on every discussion of Shalach Manos. And if they ask somebody, should I use a red basket or a blue basket for Shalach Manos? They say, well, according to the Shumas HaDeshen, so it's all about the Suda, so the red fits better on your table. But according to the Manos HaLevi, that it's about making friends, so blue is a nicer color. Yeah, somehow every Shiloh is totally on this. So you're very hard pressed to find shaylas that do not somehow invoke this discussion. It's one of the most influential chakiras in the history of chakiras. So, as we'll see, there are many other such discussions, including the even more supas-connected topic of kfiya, and that we'll have to get to next week. There was a tshuva by Blazer Deutsch, so Rav and Boni had Hungary, who was a contemporary of Chasam Sofer. So he wrote in his tshuva, Chalkas HaSada, that he thinks the whole thing is overblown, that it isn't really in my focus, that really the two stardom are saying the same thing, that they both agree that it's about making friends. They both agree that it's about the Shalom Reis. It's just that the position of Trumas Hadashen is davar beito matov, that if you want to make friends, you want to send a gift, so you should send a gift that's most relevant to what's going on right now, that's most useful for people's needs. So since people are making a suda that day, so if you send food, you're going to help out with the suda. But he didn't mean to say that there's anything radically different here. So he thought there isn't even a machlokas, the whole thing is overblown, but the Chasam Sofer was much more influential, and since then, again, this has been taken as the machlokas that has influenced all the shilas and shalachmanis, as we'll see in greater detail next week. Okay, so just to quickly recap, and then we'll dive into what we speak about today. So we talk a little bit about some added thoughts about the question of an ani giving staka. Is an ani giving staka because of alachta v'drafa, but because of v'hafla rechon kamocha? The question of whether we expect the ani to collect from staka so that he can give staka, or is it just about him squeezing himself a little bit more so that he can be involved in staka on some level? And that the Rambam, in the context of Machas HaShekel, explicitly writes that you will give the ani enough so that he can give a Machas HaShekel. Give this Mar Makom from the Ola Yaakov, who talks about the priority of relatives, is that a din in Staka and the inherent fulfillment of Staka, or the external din of Yitzhak al Salim? And then we talk a little bit more about priorities within Staka of causes, a brief reference to the Somos, a little bit more about Talmud Torah, with Moshe Feinstein's discussion about whether it applies to young students or older men training to serve the community. Discussion about mitzvahs based on Knesset, the Tosus and the Shulchan Aruch, and how exactly we rank that, and then some discussion about how all of these priorities are abstract and a little bit subject to major real-world differences. And we gave a comparison about the Rambam statement about Bikur Cholim and then Nichum Avelim, and talked about that a little bit. And then talked about in the finest in the Aklam and the Nei Yisrael, and the Machlokas Rashi and Iran, the Shach Pasmas like Iran, that it applies even when there are no Nei Yisrael present. And then we got into the Sugis of Purim and talked about the Tokef of Divrei Kabbalah, and about the Tori Evan, who assumes that Divrei Kabbalah could Divrei Torah Dami for all intents and purposes, and therefore the four mitzvahs of Purim will have a greater chumrah to them. And then we started talking about what the mitzvah of Shalach Manas is, about the controversial Kula, I guess, of the Ramah, that Mechila works, that if somebody offers Shalach Manas and a recipient says it's okay, then the one who offers is Yotze, and many disagree, the Pechadish and others who question this. We talked about the Korban Nesanal discussion about whether this is like Mechila in general, or alone, where it should be in the hands of the creditor to say it's okay. Do we know that that's true here as well? So the Chasam Sofer's response to this question was to investigate and to find two opinions as to what Shalach Manas is about. On the one hand, the Trumas Hadeshen that is here to help with the Suda. On the other hand, the Manas Halevi that is there to make friends, and his assumption that if it's about making friends, then indeed it's the thought that counts. But if it's there to help with the Suda, then it doesn't make sense we'd allow Mechila, because that would undermine the whole process of the mitzvah, and therefore that's how he addresses the question. And the assumption that many have followed in this past, despite the protestations of the Chelkis and Sada, that isn't really much of a machlokas, they're both talking about making friends, but in the past few hundred years, the assumption has been that the path of some Sofer and the Shaila is kind of the template for a lot of Shailas in Shalach Manas, as we will see more a little bit next week. All right. Actually,